This programme was made with the support of Sound and Vision, Broadcasting Funding Scheme, a BCI initiative.
At about 9:30 in the evening, we'd go downstairs into the basement and we were given tea or milk and a cake. Now, you can imagine the luxury in the 1950s of getting a donut with jam in the middle of it.
Welcome to our fourth and final programme in this series about the history of the Boys' Club. In this programme, we'll be looking at the state's role in the development of the Boys' Club, which were known as the Bruinne. Later, Maurice O'Hearn talks about the development of An Comhairle le Lasóige. But first, Paddy Cleary and Jackie Farrelly. I met them along with my dad, Joe, in the shadow of Croke Park, just off Dorset Street, behind what was the depot for Johnson, Mooney and O'Brien.
Gonna make a sentimental journey.
I got involved in 1945. Yeah. I was 14 then, and that's how I got involved. And I joined a club with six of us from Cabra, six of our pals, yeah. And the six of us joined a club together. Yeah. And I think two of them have died. And we were in the club for about...
Who were the six?
The six was Andy Bourne from Offaly Road, Jerry Byrne from Coola, and there was Paddy Fitzpatrick, lived in Offaly Road, and... who was that guy? Oh, God. He lived in Offaly as well. But there were six of us anyway that I kind of brought down. And we stopped in it for about 2-3 years. But I stopped on until it was 1950, I think it was. And I was then asked by Dad, I think it was Matt at the conference, would I be interested in joining? No, I left for the year. Would I be interested in joining the conference? Which I thought was a privilege to be asked to join the conference, Vincent DePaul. And I'd done that, of course, and I was delighted. And I was on the conference up to the present day.
Well, I happened to be one of the group, the first group ever.
As a boy? As a boy or a leader?
As a boy. And we were, they got details from the local schools of boys who had just left that year, finished in school that year. In those days, the primary school went on to 14 years of age. And a lot of boys, that was the end of their education for the vast majority of boys, without their education finished. Some of us that were a little bit luckier went on and got a couple of years training in some secondary education, or there was an outstanding course in the technical schools, as they called them them days. And you could do, it was a full day course for 5 days a week. And you could do this course, and they did the normal subjects of English, mathematics, but they also did science, and they also did practical subjects like metalwork and woodwork. Now, Brew Padraig, as far as I know, was the voluntary element there was the Legion of Mary. Right. And it was the same with Brew Lurgan, I think. But Brew were a way unique insofar as it was the St. Vincent de Paul Society that was set, that did the voluntary part of it. And we had some outstanding people in the St. Vincent de Paul Conference, specially set up. It was called a Special Works Conference of the St. Vincent de Paul Society. And included amongst the people, he wasn't there, I think, in the beginning, but he did come after a few years. It was the well-known television man, Eamon Andrews. Mm-hmm. Now, he was there for a good few years in the early part of it. You remember him, Jack?
I just remember him.
Do you remember him being there? Well, he was very much there when I was there first. And even at that time, he was doing boxing commentaries before. Yeah. This is the pre-television area. Yeah. And he was doing boxing commentaries, and many of the fellows, like myself, we didn't even have a radio at home those days. So they used to bring a radio into the club, and we'd all be there, and a big crowd of us all listening to, as he was called, Brother Andrews, commentating on the fights.
Cassius Clay was dancing around the ring with his arms held at waist level, hardly bothering to throw a punch. Liston determined to crowd him into a corner and crush him, when suddenly a short 6-inch right cross to the point of the chin, and Liston was down.
The experiment was a good experiment. that we was the volunteer groups were supplied with the premises. We were supplied with a big house originally in 3 Great Denmark Street, next door to Barry's Hotel. And we had that whole house there, big old Georgian house from top to bottom. And we moved some years later. I can't remember exactly what year. Jack, you might remember.
Was 50s as far.
We moved to 20 North Great Georgian Street.
I think did the tech take over the original house?
Yeah, that's what happened. That after some years there, the cut backs or something they must have been doing, and so they wouldn't give us the use of the premises during the day. And so they brought in some students from the vocational education and used it as part a technical school. And eventually the technical school pushed the youth club out. But then somebody thought the idea of giving the youth club a new building. But then the same process began with the new building. The technical schools then, with the boys, the overflow from the technical schools were sent to the new building. And we didn't quite get pushed there.
And how did the club affect them in later years?
When I get older, losing my head, many years from now.
A few years ago, Father O'Neill, one of the former chaplains, was celebrating his Golden Jubilee. And so I organised a group of former members of Brewery for to form a little committee and to get a number of people for to have a little function and make a presentation to them. And we managed to get together. This was 1999. We managed to get together 50 people, 50 former members. Now, of course, thousands of members would have passed through Brewery in the period up to this, you know. And so I took the opportunity to ask a few of them, like Liam Cullen.
Liam Cullen,
Liam.
And we call him Liam, he was always Liam or Limo. Right, Liam Cullen, Tommy Sherlock, and John Tracy, and them. And I just asked them now one night, did the club make any difference in your life? And the answer I got from them all was, the club was our life.
Yeah, true.
Right? And that'd be, in those days, probably the general answer from the majority of boys. This particular club, Brewery, was open every night, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. On Saturday night, we showed movies. So there were movies on Saturday night. And on Sunday, we'd have football, hurling, various other activities.
Portland.
So it was a full life. And very often in the earlier stages, we had a club going during the daytime when a lot of boys were unemployed. And we'd have activities data. I was only a boy myself at that time, but they would have had activities for boys.
For boys during the day,
yeah.
And then you had camps, and you had your
camps.
Very important part of the club. Tell us about a bit about the camps, Jack.
Well, the camps were organised. It was an annual camp, but it used to be fortnight in a week. And it brought back memories of my first camp. It was down in Glen Cray. It was the hostel down there. And it was the ex, used to be a prison or something years ago, or the former. It was the Red Cross had taken her over, and they had the German children there. And we would mix in with them for a week and a fortnight. But it was the most wonderful week I had, my first week down there.
1947, was it?
1947 it was.
This post-war, were you
on that? Oh, yeah, I think you're... Yeah. I have a photograph of that group.
You would be able to... I thought it was great that you had your freedom from your family, you could do it. But it was such a wonderful week, and you made so many friends. And I still have those friends, some of them. And it's changed my whole life.
Jack's talking about what is now the Glen Cray Reconciliation Centre down in the valley of Glen Cray. You've probably gone down there for a day's trip and visited the place there.
Yeah, the annual camps were the key for every club, every year, every young fella at that age, at that time. Yeah. When holidays were a thing, were unknown.
Well,
the thing I was curious about was, did Brewer last the test of time? I mean, did the brew kind of change? In what year did the brew change now? Is it still there, still functioning, or...?
Well, Brewery is still there. We stopped the camps about 4 or 5 years ago. As we discovered on the camp, we'd always go down to the parents and ask now, could he go? And we discovered on the visitation, the 24 boys were going to Miami, Florida. And we were shocked to hear that. We didn't think they went on holidays.
Yeah.
And this is the group. We had kind of moved back into Hardwick Street. We had stopped going to Ballybock and all that area and all the avenue, the flats. Because we were concentrating with the area.
Yeah.
But most of them, would thank God, they all did very well and they were going off. So we said, why should the Vincent de Paul, you know, be getting money, subsidising them? And we kind of stopped the campaign.
Yeah.
When we were finding it hard to get the leaders as well.
Yeah.
Now we are getting great help from the Trinity College, Vincent de Paul there. They sent us 6 leaders along. But at the same time, we couldn't see we'd have a camp. But the camps were great. They were a great way of bonding.
The brew with it is actually still ticking over.
We're still ticking over.
Only based on the support of the VDP.
Only for the Vincent de Paul, it would not be there.
Yeah,
there's no doubt in the world.
Cola de la Soga, later renamed the City of Dublin Youth Service Board, was established in 1942 as a subcommittee of the City of Dublin Vocational Education Committee. For young people brought up in the poverty-pocked city tenements, life was very tough. Many left primary school with insufficient skills and few opportunities to gain meaningful employment. A tiny proportion went on to secondary education. So it was in this context that Cola de la Soga introduced the BRU model. BRU were located in adapted old buildings in disadvantaged parts of the city centre, and later in large public housing estates such as Crumlin and locally in Dunnecarney. These centres specifically set out to give young people practical vocational skills in carpentry, metalwork, leatherwork, home economics, sewing and literacy. Cola provided trained instructors. Evening time social and recreational activities were organised for the young people by voluntary leaders from the Society of St Vincent de Paul and the Legion of Mary. The Catholic Archbishop of Dublin appointed chaplains to these centres. In the 1940s and 1950s, youth activities in Bruinne, as in other voluntary youth clubs, were organised on a single-sex basis. Maurice Ahern retired in recent times after spending many years working with Ancola. And he told me how the Cola was established and how the Bruinne developed.
The background was government were concerned about youngsters. It was a huge problem in terms of both the health of young kids who were hanging around, etc., weren't going to school. Health was bad and there's no jobs and they were just hanging around and they didn't know what to do with them. Mainly city centre kids and mainly boys. So in 1941, the Minister for Education at the time, he invited the City of Dublin VEC in. I think they were called the County Dublin VEs or the Dublin... Anyway, it's the City of Dublin VEC anyway. And they invited the director of that and a few other people in from the board of the CVEC to discuss the whole matter of trying to do something for these young lads, and mainly from the point of view of education and recreation, what they're doing at night time, and just generally trying to help them and try and attack that problem. So basically, anyway, what happened was then that they had this meeting in 1941 and they agreed they would try and set up what they were calling training centres at the time. That was the official name. They were going to set up 3 training centres in Dublin, in the city centre. The first was going to be what turned out to be, they called it Bruinne and Oak in the first, but the name changed about a year later. It was called Brú Páirc. So the idea, and after that then, in 43, Brú Huire was set up, as far as I know, and, you know, I'm almost certain now. A year or two later, Brú Lorcan was established, now not where it was in Lower Garden Street, but somewhere else up around that area. It could have been out towards the North Strand.
Yeah.
I think that's the first place, but within a year or two, it settled in there. So the whole idea was actually to try to get youngsters from the city centre. And the focus in the beginning was with Brú Páirc. In 1942, Cola was established, Cola la Soga, and was set up as a statutory body as a subcommittee of the City of Dublin VEC, much as they are at the moment. A committee was appointed to run Cola la Soga, and one of the things was that the whole concept was to develop around daytime educational skills and all that sort of stuff, almost like, you know, like a training centre. And woodwork, everything, carpentry, woodwork, leather work, all sorts of things. And also just the education things, you know, just pure reading and writing, etc., etc., and all that. And that was fine. And then at night time, they had this thing of like a youth club, really. It was recreational activities for those kids who were there. Now, I can't remember the exact number, but there was about the first lot in, they had 5 days a week, I think it was, and then there was optional stuff in terms of, say, sport and that, all and the things that happened at the weekend out in the VEC in Terranure, in the grounds. So it basically was set up as, the first one was set up as a training thing. And now it's purely experimental. The Legion of Mary offered to run the club, the first one for them. And they were trained in a really serious training course. And there was a graduation and everything else for them. And the Minister for Education, as far as I remember, attended it. Like, it was something like 4 or 5 months serious training course, you know. And then what happened then was that Archbishop McQuaid was in on it, and he agreed to provide chaplains for the first brew in the beginning, you know. And that was the model. And so in, I think it was in May 1942, the official opening of Cóir Las Óige happened. In attendance was Dev, and John McQuaid was there, and the opposition were there, Costello or Cosgrove, I can't remember which one it was, the Lord Mayor of Dublin, who was a fellow called Brannock, I think, and it was all, I mean, it was a big deal, you know, and they were really hopeful that this would develop. They weren't sure how it was going to develop. But apart from that, the plan, the sort of the objectives for Cóir Las Óige was, well, okay, one was to set up three centres, but a second objective was to set up employment bureaus for the youngsters, and they got the trade unions involved in it, and it was going to be a resource to the youngsters that they wouldn't be exploited wages wise and all that sort of stuff. And then the third objective was to, however way they could, there was no money around, was to support the existing clubs, youth clubs that were in existence at the time, which were very few in 1942, but there was in that area. All that was established, and it was all focusing around one centre, establishing Brew Porrick as a centre. That seemed to be going well. They brought in so many kids, and they were recruiting them very carefully. They were invited in, they weren't just, but there was in that area of where Brew Porrick was, they did a survey, and they identified about 200 kids, young lads, who would fit the bill, who were appropriate to this, who needed training, etc., etc. Like, in my opinion, the committee were really far-sighted. Now, there was a good few clerics on it and priests, and you wouldn't think to be that far-sighted, you know, but they were really on the ball. They got a grant, the government gave them a grant, 5,000 quid, to set up the whole thing, which came through the VEC, unusual result, went from VEC into this organisation. And a director was appointed to run Cóir Las Óige. One of the things that was set up as part of the structure was financial support group. They came together as a sort of a fundraising support group for the brew and the program of the brew, because there was very little money. And that group were mainly women, and they went off fundraising and all that sort of stuff. You know, one of them was Sean Lamass's wife, and the other was Oscar Traynor's wife. Which is really amazing, you know, and he was linked into the whole 1916 Oscar Traynor's there, you know. There was it was a serious link in terms of Nationalist Ireland, you know what I mean, in terms of the Republican movement at the time, or whatever you like to call it, you know. This organisation began to develop slowly, and it was, like, they're really on the ball, I said. But one of the things that happened was that a lot of organisations, bodies in Dublin, were in there to support it and wanted to support it. And nobody knew what way it was going to go. But anyway, like, for instance, Tara Street Baths offered their baths free to kids who were part of the core that set this new setup. And Dublin Corporation did something else, and there was a scout group down the quays, and they were down just down by the river, one of the ones just down the docks. Like, there was a lot of stuff going on. The guards in College Green, I think it was, or College Street, offered them the use of the handball alley. The GEA came in. The president of the GEA actually came into Cóir Las Óige And I wanted to find out what the ethos was of this new organisation. And now it was very conservative. And basically, they were supportive, and they ended up sending in, giving Corla something like 40 hurleys for the young fellas to play hurley. And all that sort of, it just seemed to be something special. They were going to really make a goal, you know, of doing it. The Brew had its programme for the morning and afternoon, and then night programme, that's what I think earlier on. So, you know, and anyway, that's the way it started. The night time was really run strictly, you know, it was no messing around. And you had lots of volunteers, and then you had, on the committee, you had a representative from the boys as well, which is very far-sighted, you know. 1943, then, the second Corla Brew was established. Exact same setup, except that this time, I think it was the VDP, were Vince DePaul, were actually running. That was Brew Lorcan. And that was based around North Strand, end of things. And then they moved into Lower Gardiner Street. And then a year or two after that, Brew River was set up. And they all worked the same thing, and it was working. Now, one of the things that happened very soon after that was, I'd say it was in the first 4 years or so, it was after Brew Lorcan was set up, but it became clear that the morning-afternoon thing wasn't working, the way kids weren't coming to it, etc., etc. And also, at the same time, the VEC themselves were into this continuation, what they call continuation education, in a formal way. So they actually moved in, and they actually set up classes, you know, took over the continuation education with their slant on it, formal education, in the Three Brews. And at night time, the kids went to the club. And that's actually what actually turned out in the first three. And it was a big change of policy. And then there was a problem. Problems arose then about, you know, Corley using the building and the VEC using the building, and the whole hassle on that, you know. And eventually, it was decided by the VEC that they would purchase three buildings for each brew, separate from the VEC. So anyway, that was the start of it. Yeah. And after that, then a few more brews came in. But then the emphasis came really on the existing youth clubs and developing new youth clubs. And as the city developed, you're saying, you know, and all the support services that are there now came in at that stage. I couldn't believe it. You know, they had grants for instructors. Grants for swimming. Not only a grant for swimming and hiring a pool, but you had an instructor provided as well. And that was one of the big, I always felt that was one of the big services that was really good. In Brew Porrick, they were mad into football.
That's right.
Mad into it. I mean, they would have had 15 teams.
That's right.
And they had an adult team of fellas who wouldn't leave, you know, when they left, because they're involved in all the leagues and CYC leagues. And like, it was serious stuff. And you had people like Sheila Darcy playing for them. Do you remember Sheila Darcy? Sheila Darcy. Bringing with the Brew Porrick, when that developed a little bit further, geography-wise, it sort of developed its membership out into Ringsend. Right. And that brought in a whole lot of people like Alf Ringstead and all these guys, you know, great football, international soccer players.
Right.
And they were all on the Brew teams. And there was fierce rivalry in the CYC leagues.
Right.
But it was serious stuff, and Belvedere were the same. They had about 15, 20 teams as well. Once the three brews were set up, and the emphasis really went on supporting existing clubs. And then you had the introduction of when all the clubs were coming in and they were beginning to mix among each other, and they started having competitions, whether it was table tennis or whatever it was, and the CYC came on board in 1943, and they weren't grant aiding, but we would grant aid their stuff that they were putting on. So they would do drama stuff. We had drama instructors, and we ended up having sort of drama festivals, and then things like the galas, swimming gala, and boxing competition in the stadium, you know. It was great stuff, you know.
Delaney has gone past Houston, 50 metres from the tape. Gold medal with his grasp. Landy is coming fast at the curve. He's catching a German, but running Delaney does it. Gold for Ireland.
And before we leave this forgotten piece of history, a final few words from Paddy, Jackie and Joe on what it meant to be a member of the boys' club.
You mentioned when you were asked a question about what did it mean to you. I met a guy, Paddy Knowles, and Tommy Dunn, right?
Tommy
he was a shopkeeper on North Reddy Street. He's an ex-boy of our club, right? Paddy clearly knows
very
well. And I would meet Paddy, Tommy Dunn, on the bus on a Friday, coming home from town. And the first thing he'd say was, "How is Brother Proctor?"
Brother Proctor.
I mentioned later on, Brother Proctor, yeah. Michael Proctor, God rest him, has died about 5 weeks ago, on May the 24th. And that's the first question. And the second thing he said was, "Do you know, Joe, we all owe what we are today to Michael Proctor,
that's
Jackie Fardell, Paddy Cleary, Joe O'Connor."
Well,
and I think that's a great attribute.
Well, I find that visiting the parents now, they thank me, they're so grateful that only for the bars gone to the club, they wouldn't know what they would be today.
Yeah.
And they would have been mixed up with drugs. Yeah. But they attribute that to the youth of the club.
Yeah.
And I remember I was told one time by Father Neil, every minute you give to the youth club and the society, you'll get it back 1,000 times. I have got that back. I married a wonderful woman from that was met in Vincent de Paul. My three children done very well. One was a top economist in America, the other two are bank managers in Dublin,
yeah.
Not the ordinary banks, but the financial banks.
Yeah.
And I attribute that all to Brewer.
Yeah.
And I have a very happy marriage, and I attribute that to Brewer.
Yeah.
So this present, and my health, thank God, I attribute to every minute I give to Brewer, yeah. I've got it back 1,000 times.
I was connected with it for a very long time, you know.
Yeah.
I went there in 1942.
Oh, those years.
You know, and yeah. More or less, you see, there was a rule that you had to be 14.
You sneaked in.
It was
you snuck in.
Honoured in the breach more than the observance, you know. And there was also, you had to leave when you were 18.
Yeah, yeah.
Which one, a rule which was completely ignored, you know.
Yeah, because I know in lot of the club at the Dunmore, they overcome that. They developed an old boys section, a premier
section.
We got
that, we had that too.
You had to get out at 18.
We done the same as well.
Yeah,
and then what we done was, we developed the leaders from the 17-year-olds. I'm a product of that policy.
Right.
And you were a product, both of you
were
a product. That
would have happened in Brewer too, you know.
Listen, Paddy and Jackie, I think it was great. Thanks very much for coming into this documentary, because I think we've nearly kind of hit another element of the North inner city, particularly around the famous Belvedere College area, Barry's Hotel, the Belvedere Hotel, Lucky Duffy down in Parnell Street. What we can say is that David Norris should be delighted that Brew Wirra, which was founded and developed across the road, is still ticking over after, what, nearly 70 years? 1942, 68 years.
Just
thanks, Paddy and Jackie. I appreciate that, okay?
It's a pleasure to meet you, Joe.
Thank you.
And that's Jackie, Paddy and Joe finishing off this final programme in the Boys Club series. A slice of history perhaps forgotten by many until now. My sincere thanks to all those boys who share their memories and personal stories throughout this series of programmes. Thanks especially to my dad, Joe O'Connor, for finding all these men who mapped out a fascinating era of Dublin history. I'm Dave O'Connor, and I hope you enjoyed the personal stories from the boys who became men.
The programme was made with the support of Sound and Vision, Broadcasting Funding Scheme, a BCI initiative.